It's more than just another radio show. It's a beacon of truth. Fasten your seatbelt and find out why they call Deacon Harold Burke Sivers the Dynamic Deacon. Join Deacon Harold for a fast-paced hour that sheds encouraging light on today's culture. Welcome to Beacon of Truth with your host, Deacon Harold Burke Sivers.
Hello and welcome to Beacon of Truth. I am your host, Deacon Harold Burke Sivers, and you're listening to Beacon of Truth on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. And I am absolutely thrilled today because I have one of my closest and dearest friends on the show, Ken Hellenius, who's the Communications Director at the D. Nicola Center for Ethics and Culture at my alma mater, the University of Notre Dame. And so we're going to talk about all the wonderful work that's being done there and what Ken's role is and even a little bit about our friendship and how we met and other projects that we worked on together. So I'm absolutely thrilled to have him on today. You know, I've been still kind of basking in the glow of the Deacon's Retreat that I was on a little over a week ago, which I talked about. And one thing I wanted to mention was that we had a bonus segment on the retreat. So we had our regular retreat sessions, and then we had an extra session, which you called, you know, like the bonus feature. You know, like remember on the DVDs, like when you used to buy DVDs, it had bonus features like outtakes or interviews with the actors or actresses and things like that. And so our bonus feature, he talked about demonology. And so not a topic that it wasn't part of the main topic for the retreat, obviously, but wanted to kind of introduce us deacons, because obviously we're not part of exorcisms and things like that. But he wanted to talk to us about this. And, you know, I found it to be very, very interesting. You know, this wasn't the first time I was introduced to this topic, but it's not something that I think about, not something I talk about. But I found it to be very, very interesting about, you know, how demons work. And he talked about the movie Nefarious, which I had not seen. Because most of the movies I watch are on airplanes. So unless they're showing it on the plane, you know, I'm really don't have time to watch a lot of movies. And so, but I did take some time, to see that. It was very well done. He told us about Father Carlos Martins, if that name sounds familiar, he's not only an exorcist, but he's the kind of the main relics guy that goes around with huge displays of first class relics. And Father Martins was Carlos Martins was saying that this was the best movie he'd ever seen that really shows how demons actually work. Not like The Exorcist, all these things where that kind of stuff is exaggerated, you know, and overblown and Hollywoodized. But this was I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very interesting. You know, and typically I don't like movies like that, because they scare me, you know, because I still have memories of watching The Exorcist for the first time. That was, back when, you know, when cable, before you had remotes, you know, you had the cable was actually attached to like the back of the box on the television. You had to move the channel selector by hand and all that kind of stuff. And I remember watching The Exorcist for the first time and just like couldn't move off the couch. You know, it really scared me, that movie. And back then was The Omen was another one that came out during that time when I was a kid. And so your whole thing about how evil and all that stuff works is, you know, is tainted or influenced by these movies. You think, wow, that's really how it works. So it was refreshing to really not just kind of get the kind of crash course on how demons work and how they come into your life, but then also to see Nefarious as well. You know, and one of the interesting things which I did know and actually talked when I talked to young people, I tell them about this, is that you have to give permission for this evil to come into your life. You know, it's not like you're walking down the street and like a demon jumps into you or something like that. You know, you have to create an opening for them to come into your life. And so some of those are pornography, Ouija boards, seances, things like that. And these kids play all these games and they think it's funny and they think it's entertaining, but really you're giving permission for evil to come into your life. And so that's why we have to counter this in our life through a deep life of prayer and intimacy with the Lord. You know, and again, this is, for me, this is nothing to be afraid of, but to be aware that this is real, because there are people, even in the church, who think that this stuff is just not real. In fact, in a movie, the priest that came to visit, you know, didn't believe that demons were real. He just thought they were literary constructs or, you know, fallacies and that was passed down through the generations as kind of a creative way to think about evil. And, you know, but this stuff is real. So I think what I'm going to do, I have a friend who's actually a demonologist, and I'm going to invite him to be on the show to talk about this. Not so that we shouldn't, fear these kinds of things, and what kind of signs we can look for, especially, you know, and how can we talk to our kids about this kind of thing? Again, not to scare us, but just to be aware that there is evil out there, and that the whole goal of demons and Satan is trying to destroy covenant relationship with God, and we can't let that happen. So, but today we're talking to my good friend Ken Hellenius and his incredible work that they're doing at the D. Nicholas Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. If you want to join us, send us an email, beacon@ewtn.com. And this show is brought to you by some fantastic people working behind the scenes. We have Matt Gabinski screening calls. We have Charles Berry doing social media, and Ace McKay, producer extraordinaire. How you doing, Ace?
Hey, Deacon, I'm good. You know, you were talking about The Exorcist, and I couldn't help but remember the first time I saw that movie. First of all, you know, was way too young to even be watching it. But, you know, I grew up a horror film fan, right? So for me, I was more drawn into the curiosity. But then as I've gotten older, obviously processing a lot of that through my faith, I realize, you know, it's not like we can watch these movies and think that for a second we can even begin to, you know, conduct our own exorcism. And I know, you know, hearing stories from demonologist Adam Bly, like this is a true reality that there's some serious stuff going on, that we have to realize that it's not just Hollywood makeup and movies, but this is real supernatural activity happening.
Yeah, and it was really interesting hearing, you know, and Father Mitch Pack was said the same thing, that Nefarious was very well done. And a number of exorcists have said how accurate that is. It's like how demons actually work. And it really wasn't scary. I mean, I wasn't like, oh my goodness, I'm like freaked out after seeing this movie. It was very interesting, the demon's thoughts and how it worked. No, you're right. You know, it's you know, the thing, when you open yourself, you know, to receive these kinds of things, you know, you're allowing evil to work. And and one of the things that the demon was saying in the movie, well, first of all, he referred to Jesus as the carpenter. He never actually obviously referred to the name of Jesus, and how the carpenter messed up Satan's plan. But his whole plan is to go after humanity, to destroy what God created. You know, and he talked about how in the culture, how we're doing it kind of to ourselves. And sometimes he said that the demons are even surprised at how evil we can be, human beings can be to each other. You know, there's several things that really made you stop and think about how we treat each other, how beautiful the teaching is of the church in issues when it comes to the meaning of what it means to be human. When it comes to how we you know, the teachings of Jesus juxtapose, you know, to what the demon was talking about. You know, so it really, to me, was a wonderful wake-up call of not only remaining close to the Lord in our personal lives, but extending that invitation to love, life, intimacy, and communion to all those people that are in our sphere of influence, starting in our family and working out to our friends and coworkers and everybody, not being afraid to witness to the power of God's love. And what was interesting is that the protagonist in the movie was a psychologist who was there to evaluate this prison inmate. And he was atheist. and interesting, what he thought about what was happening and how he processed that as an atheist, I thought was really interesting. So, we definitely have work to do. We definitely have work to do. So when we come back, we're going to do our Soulful Psalm segment and then bring in my friend Ken Hellenius on Beacon of Truth. I'm Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers. That's awesome. Nice little riff there. Yeah, I like that. Kind of a Zep feel. Yeah. You know, I'm so proud of myself for putting together my own pedal board. You know, it was pretty cool. And when I plugged in the other day, I forgot. Like, you know, was it not working? And I forget, you have to, so the first link in the signal chain is the tuner. And you have to turn the tuner, the tuner off so that the rest of the pedal board can work. And I keep forgetting to do that. Because obviously the first thing I do is tune up. And then I forget to turn it off. Like, why isn't this thing working? As soon as you tune the turner on, everything works. So just a note to those of you doing this. So when you listen to the Beacon of Truth, I am your host, Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers. And if you want to be part of the show today, send us an email, beacon@ewtn.com. And as usual, our producer, Ace McKay, has some wonderful news to share with you today.
If you're looking to discover a little more about the church and its teachings, well, Father Brian Milady looking to bring that to you through his book, A Light to All Nations. If you want to check that out, easy to find when you go to ewtnrc.com. Remember the title, A Light to All Nations, and you can check that out and make sure when you shop Catholic that you think of ewtnrc.com.
All right. Well, when you hear that music, you know it's time for us to take a look at the Psalms. And today we're going to take a look at the second part of Psalm 9. A few weeks ago, we looked at the first 11 verses of Psalm 9. And Psalm 9's long, so we had to break it up into two parts. Today we're looking at the second part, Psalm 9, verses 12 to 21. And we're using the Revised Grail Psalms that have been approved for use in the church in the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass that were compiled by the Benedictine monks of Conception Abbey. And so the prescript for Psalm 9 says, for the choir master, in the manner of a chant mutlaben, which in Hebrew means to die for the son, a psalm of David. So David wrote the psalm, he gave it to the choir master to put music to, and he wanted it to sound like the chant of with kind of this tune, Mut Laban, right? To die for the son. And so we start at verse 12. Sing psalms to the Lord who dwells in Zion, right? So Jerusalem is Zion. So the earthly name for Jerusalem is Jerusalem, the city of David. And the heavenly or the spiritual name of Jerusalem is Zion, right? Tell his mighty works among the peoples, for the avenger of blood has remembered them, has not forgotten the cry of the poor. So when we talk about revenge or punishment, see, and we talk about the death penalty, actually, we make a distinction between revenge and retributive justice, right? So the death penalty should not be treated as revenge, for a wrong that was done. Why? Because God himself is the avenger of blood. God himself is the one who exercises that kind of justice. But we're supposed to exercise is retributive justice, right? So the person who hurt us or committed a crime receives justice for that crime, but does not necessarily mean taking their life. So this is an issue that comes up that we have to remember that God is the one who ultimately avenges any wrong that was done, and maybe not in the way that we expect, but God is ultimately the great God of justice. He has not forgotten the cry of the poor. So again, sometimes we have to be patient and wait on God, because again, God works in his time, and God's timing is always perfect. Verse 14, have mercy on me, O Lord. See how I suffer from my foes. You who raised me from the gates of death, that I may recount all your praise at the gates of daughter Zion and rejoice in your salvation. Right? So we ask the Lord to have mercy on us, to look upon us in our suffering, and with the hope that he is going to raise me from the gates of death. You know, that he, even in our darkest hours, that he's with us. So that, why? That we can recount all his praise, right? So we can bear witness to the power of God's love working in our lives. But this should happen not only in moments of trial, not only in those times of darkness, but even in those times of joy and light, that we should be reflecting the beauty of God's love and God's mercy working in us. The nations have fallen in the pit which they made. Their feet have been caught in the snare they laid. The Lord has revealed himself, has given judgment. The wicked are snared by the work of their own hands. Right? So even though it may look like people who are doing evil are succeeding, are receiving the privileges that this world has to offer. Remember, who's running this world? It's the world, the flesh, and the devil. We should be looking, our eyes should be, and our hearts should be looking upward, should be looking up toward God, up toward our ultimate end. St. Thomas Aquinas called the sonum bonum, the greatest good, life with God forever. And the earth he has given to men. And so a lot of these power trips and control and things that we're seeing are really maybe even people cooperating with the devil. Our job is to infuse Christ and our faith into the culture. And we're doing battle against the forces of evil as we're trying to do that. But ultimately, there, like it says, the wicked are snared by the work of their own hands. You know, like produces like. And so their whole thinking is going to implode on itself eventually, because the triumph is not in evil. The triumph is the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, I've heard a pastor one time say, you know, a lot of times we give the devil more credit than he deserves. And, you know, we've heard the phrase, or maybe even said ourselves, well, the devil made me do it, you know, whether we're joking or not. But a lot of times I think I've realized that, you know, I'm just as equally evil because of my habits and hangups or just the fleshly things that I am so easily conducted of. So that's why I need God to help me process and act accordingly. What do you think about that?
Yeah, exactly right. And one of the things that in the movie that the demon was saying was that kind of the first way in is through temptation. You know, not necessarily saying that the demons are tempting us, but because we're still dealing with concupiscence, right? We're still dealing with the effects of original sin and concupiscence, that those things within us as a result of free will, that we freely choose that which is not of God. And that is kind of, again, it's not, you can't necessarily blame the devil or demons for that. But when we give into the temptation, right, and when we turn our back against God's love, you know, that sets us on a path or in a direction to open ourselves more to evil. And that's why the carpenter gave us the sacrament of reconciliation, you know, which is a beautiful sacrament of God's love and mercy. So we can always come back when we've kind of moved away from his love. He always gives us the avenue to come back, which is absolutely beautiful. And just to finish this off, the wicked go down to the grave. all the nations forgetful of God. For the needy shall not always be forgotten, nor the hopes of the poor ever perish. Now, not just the poor, physical poor, but the poor in spirit. And finally, arise, O Lord, let human strength not prevail. Let the nations be judged before you. Strike them with terror, O Lord. Let the nations know they are but men. All right. So our ultimate end is not in ourselves, but in fulfillment with the will of God. So with that, I want to introduce and bring in my good friend, Ken Hellenius, who's the Director of Communications at the D. Nicholas Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. Ken and I met back in 2001 when we both worked at the University of Portland. And we've been friends ever since. And we did a radio show together for about 6 years, over 300 shows. And it was a great opportunity to work with Ken. In fact, on my very first radio show that I did on Radio Maria, way back, Ken was a regular guest on that show. So I'm so honored and blessed to have Ken with us on the show today. Hey, Ken, how you doing, my friend?
I'm really well, Deacon. Thanks a lot for having me on Beacon of Truth.
All right. So this is probably the first time that many of the listeners are hearing of you. So tell us a little bit about your background, a little bit about your story, your face.
Sure, yeah. So I'm a native of Seattle, Washington. Was raised in a very Catholic family. I went to the parish school, St. Philomena in Des Moines, Washington, and then went on to a Catholic high school, O'Day, which remains the only all-boys Catholic high school in the state of Washington. And it was while I was there that I got involved in kind of campus ministry and really really began to love my faith. And so I went off to a college seminary. I came to Indiana and went to St. Meinrad College, which was a minor seminary in southern Indiana run by the Benedictines. And spent 3 wonderful years there and then discerned that that wasn't my, that I just didn't feel it. And so I went back to Seattle and I did a little work for an insurance company, but I was still doing volunteer youth ministry. And I realized that I had to think about this call in my heart again that was still there. And I was worshiping at a Dominican parish in Seattle, Blessed Sacrament, and I entered the Dominican order. And I spent 2 years discerning priesthood as a Dominican in the Western Dominican province. My name was Brother Maximilian Mary, after the great apostle of media and evangelization and martyr of charity, Maximilian Kolbe. And then again, after a few years, I discerned, nope, this is not what God is calling me to do. And it was then in the spring of 2001 that I left, and I went to work at the University of Portland in the same few weeks that you arrived on campus at University of Portland. And I spent 15 years there at the University of Portland before I was recruited to come work at the University of Notre Dame. So it's been kind of a crazy ride to be from the Northwest and be twice a Hoosier, but we have our roots are now planted here in South Bend, Indiana. And I'm married. I have a lovely bride who works, my wife Julie works at the local Catholic parish here in town, the oldest Catholic parish in South Bend. And I work at the DeNicholas Center for Ethics and Culture on the campus of Notre Dame. So that's me in a nutshell.
All right. Excellent. When we come back, we'll dive more into the work at the DeNicholas Center. You listen to Beacon of Truth, and I'm your host, Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. Simple funky groove there. All right. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Sometimes the simplest grooves are the ones that can be most effective, you know? It's pretty awesome. I like that. I like that. Well, you're listening to Beacon of Truth. I am your host, Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. And today we're talking with my good friend and former radio co-host. We had a show together called Living Stones on the Modern Day E Radio Network, which is also part of EWTN. And now Ken is the communications director at the DeNicholas Center for Ethics and Culture at my alma mater, the University of Notre Dame. So we're going to talk about all the wonderful work that they're doing. You know, because sometimes Notre Dame could be shrouded in some controversy as far as its Catholicism. We're going to talk about a really solid Catholic part of the university today. You want to be part of the show? Just send us an email, beacon@ewtn.com.
Yes, we continue to seek wisdoms into the midst of our own faith. Mother Angelica's wits and wisdom continue to always give us insights. And tonight on EWTN television and radio, 8 Eastern, you can check out Mother Angelica Live Classics. And also anytime you want to stream clips or previous episodes, of course, of Mother Angelica, you can find that on demand when you download the EWTN app.
All right. Well, Ken introduced himself a little bit in the last segment, told us a little bit of his background and his faith journey. Now we're going to focus on the work that he's doing there and the work of the DeNicholas Center itself at the University of Notre Dame. So, Ken, why don't you just give us an overview? Because I'm sure people are listening, all of them are not too familiar with the DeNicholas Center, and you're doing some awesome work there. So tell us about it.
Yeah, so the DeNicholas Center for Ethics and Culture was established at the University of Notre Dame in 1999 to kind of propose and present the fullness and the richness of the Catholic moral and intellectual tradition, both on campus with students, faculty, and staff, and as Notre Dame then in the public square, kind of being involved in and kind of addressing the pressing moral and social issues of the day from the richness of the Catholic tradition. So we do teaching, research, and public engagement at the highest level and across the disciplines. So we are located within the College of Arts and Letters, but we have faculty that are affiliated with the center and students, undergraduate and graduate student fellows from pretty much all of the disciplines, all of the majors on campus, which as you might imagine at Notre Dame is a large number. We have kind of 4 major areas that where we work. We do research and publications, so we host the largest annual interdisciplinary conference that happens every year at Notre Dame. It's called the Notre Dame Fall Conference, an incredibly creative name for the project, but every year it brings around 1,000 to 1,200 academics, artists, writers, poets, scholars, and students from around the world to campus to discuss a major kind of topic. So for example, a couple of years ago, it was on the theme of friendship. What does it mean to be friends? When Jesus says, I have not called you slaves, but I call you friends. What does that mean? This coming fall, our topic for the fall conference will be the Catholic imagination, literature, art, filmmaking, all of these sorts of things. What does it mean to have a Catholic imagination? So we do that. We publish books with the University of Notre Dame Press, including a number of series like the Alexander Solzhenitsyn series. So we are publishing books in English that have never been before published by the Nobel Prize winning Soviet dissident Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who really thought a lot about the meaning of evil in the human heart and kind of structural sin. And, you know, kind of course, he was the great writer who moved from Soviet Russia to the West and also had things to speak about what he saw here in the West. So we're publishing wonderful works by him and books about Solzhenitsyn, as well as a number of other book series, Catholic bioethics and things like that. So that's kind of our research and publications. Then we have a student formation program. We have more than 675 undergraduate and graduate students that are affiliated with the center, that we work with them to present opportunities for them to integrate what they're learning in the classroom with what they're going to be doing for the rest of their lives, with their vocation, as they are discovering their faith, as they're discovering what they are called to do, how they are to put their talents and skills at the purpose of building the kingdom. And when I say that we support them, we do everything from, we have masses, a weekly mass that we offer. We have a First Friday mass and kind of social that we do on First Fridays throughout the academic year. We go on pilgrimages. So we've taken our students to the Holy Land two different times. We've taken students on a Eucharistic pilgrimage to Assisi and Orvieto and Rome. This past spring break, we took 35 students on pilgrimage to discover the Catholic roots of England. So we really have an opportunity to help form our students in the faith, as well as, again, to integrate their academic work with their vocation in life, so that it's more than just a job, but it's actually learning how to be a disciple and how to be a person of faith. So wonderful opportunities for our students. We get connect them with internships. We help fund internships during the summer and during breaks and things like that. We place our students at the Pontifical Academy for Life, at the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty in Washington, D.C. We've sent students out to work with Family Theater Productions, which produces films and television shows and radio shows and podcasts in Hollywood. That was founded by the Venerable Patrick Peyton, CSC. So lots of wonderful opportunities for our students. A third area is we are the locus of the pro-life work at the University of Notre Dame. We are the driving engine of pro-life activity and witness at the university. We work with the Student Right to Life Club. Notre Dame Right to Life Club is the largest single student pro-life club in the nation. Notre Dame Right to Life typically will bring hundreds and hundreds of students to the March for Life in Washington, D.C. Each January. We've done marches on campus. The Right to Life Club is incredibly active in witnessing to the value of and dignity of all human life, both on campus and in the public square. We also administer the Notre Dame Evangelium Vitae Medal, which is a pro-life lifetime achievement medal for heroes of the pro-life movement, the pro-life work. Just actually at the end of April, we presented the 2024 Notre Dame Evangelium Vitae Medal to a fantastic, beautiful neonatologist, Dr. Elvira Paravicini, who works at Columbia University Medical Center, where she runs the Neonatal Comfort Care Program, which is a program that specifically works with families and parents and babies that receive a life-limiting diagnosis in the womb. She and her team worked with 800 families over the last year. And these are babies that are either going to die while they're in utero, or they're going to die soon afterward, or of course the miracle cases where the baby actually is able to live a long, full life. And she and her ministry are so incredibly beautiful, because in New York City, where she is, you know, so many of those babies, a single tiniest little, you know, deformed finger or something like that, parents will choose to abort and say, well, we'll just try for a perfect one next time. Dr. Paravicini and her team give those parents an option to love the baby that is already created, that is already there, that is already part of their family. And so it's a wonderful celebration. We had 500 people gather for mass in the Basilica of the Sacred Heart with our Bishop Kevin C. Rhodes. We had a wonderful banquet and dinner and celebration. Just beautiful, beautiful. And this is what we get to do every year. We get to honor a pro-life hero. Last year we honored Robert P. George, Professor Robbie George at Princeton University, who was really a behind-the-scenes chief architect of the work that took 50 years to overturn Roe v. Wade. And we've honored the Sisters of Life, we've honored the Little Sisters of the Poor, the Knights of Columbus, so many fantastic witnesses to life and dignity. And that's something we get to do at the DeNicola Center. So that's the third area of our major work. And then the fourth is what we call mission stewardship. We help Notre Dame hire and retain faculty that are 100% committed to the authentic, unique Catholic mission of Notre Dame as the world's greatest top-tier research university. And again, these are people who are committed to the mission of its distinctively Catholic identity. And so we currently support, I think it's 9 faculty lines across the disciplines. It's just a fantastic way for us to support this authentic Catholic identity of Notre Dame. So that's really what the DeNicola Center does. And my job as the communications specialist is to talk about all those things and then to get people to attend our events and people to watch our talks that we put on our YouTube channel and all these sorts of wonderful things. So I get to talk about wonderful Catholic things all day long.
All right. Well, you're listening to the Beacon of Truth. I am your host, Deacon Harold Burke Sivers, and we're talking with my good friend and communications specialist at the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. Now, some of you heard Ken just now, you're like, wait a minute. Whenever I hear about Notre Dame, it's always something controversial. You know, they're giving Notre Dame's highest award to a pro-life politician, or, you know, they're allowing some transgender conference, pro-transgender conference on campus and things like that. And now you're giving us a very different picture of some of the incredible, beautiful, solidly Catholic work that's going on there. Do you ever find yourself and the Nicola Center in kind of conflict butting heads with some of those other elements on campus?
I would say that so often our response is simply to keep on doing the good work that we are doing, and to witness, and to just keep sharing the truth, because what is it they say? You know, when you fight with a pig, you end up getting muddy. You know, and I think our approach is let's preach and witness in a joyful manner to the truth of the Catholic faith, the truth of this wonderful moral and intellectual tradition that we have inherited. So often it is to reach across. We very much want to, and we do reach across the aisle, as it were, to include many different voices in the stuff, in the presentations and conferences that we do, because part of reaching the truth is being in dialogue with one another. But so often we do take a stance and we say, this is the truth of the tradition that we have received, and we are going to share that, and we are going to witness to that. And we are also going to invite those who don't agree with us to be part of the dialogue, but we are going to say we do believe in a truth. We don't believe that truth is simply decided by the people that are in the room. We believe that God is truth, and in witnessing to God, we are witnessing to the ultimate reality. And so I'd say that's more often our approach, is to be in dialogue, but also to say that we do stand for something. We do stand for the truth of the gospel. That's probably the best way to describe what we do.
Yeah, and within that's a huge lesson for all of us, right? So many times people want to complain about the Pope or complain about what's going on in the church, or, you know, the fact that we've received almost contradictory messages within the church, things that have angered people, the kind of, you know, pulling back on the extraordinary form of the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, for example, very contradicting and confusing teachings on things, you know, and so people want to focus on that, almost like people who spend most of their day watching politics on television or listening to political talk radio. You know, people are angry all the time, you know, and what I think the message that you're saying, Ken, is beautiful in the sense that, you know, yeah, we know those things are going on. We're aware of those things, but we're not focusing on those things. And I say that all the time. You know, what I try to focus on and the work that I'm doing is helping to bring people to a deeper intimacy and love of their faith, of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and the Catholic faith. Yes, I'm aware of what's going on, but I'm not going to focus and talk about those things because there's already enough people talking about that stuff. What we need to focus on is deepening relationship and intimacy with Christ, you know, and sounds like the D. Nicholas Center is doing the same thing, you know, not focusing on controversy, but focusing on the message of the gospel and bringing that message to the hearts of anyone who will listen and to as many people as possible. So, that's a great work. Now, when the center first started, it wasn't called the Nicholas Center. That was a fairly recent change in the name, correct?
Yeah, in 2019, we had a wonderful celebration of Mass and kind of a dedication. Our wonderful friends, the chairs of our executive advisory committee, Tony and Christy DeNicola, they are a fantastic, faithful couple. They were, they're from the New York area, New York, New Jersey area where they were living. And their son had become connected to the DeNicola Center as one of our Soren Fellows. So they came into our orbit while he was a student at Notre Dame. And they stepped up and provided us with this wonderful gift that allows us to, have this support, a kind of an endowed gift that gives the center perpetual support. And so we had Cardinal Dolan came to and celebrated Mass and preached with us, and Father John Jenkins, the president of the university, came and blessed our space on that weekend in 2019. Yeah, so we were the Center for Ethics and Culture that started under the leadership of the great Professor David Solomon, who was a longtime professor at the university, who was an expert in bioethics and just a fantastic Baptist. Who loved the teaching of Pope St. John Paul II. He was inspired by and accepted the vision of both Evangelium Vitae and Faith and Reason. And so he was inspired, and then he worked with the provost at the time to start the Center for Ethics and Culture in 1999. And then, yeah, we received this wonderful kind of vote of great confidence in 2018 when we, or 2018, 2019, when we dedicated the center as the DeNicola Center. And so it's been a wonderful place to be. I came, so I was at University of Portland until 2016, and a dear friend of mine, Father Bill Daly, who had come back to teach at Notre Dame, was the chaplain at the center. And he told me, you need to come and work here because the DeNicola Center, or the, you know, Center for Ethics and Culture, these are your people. And it's been a fantastic, I mean, I picked my wife and our dog up and we moved halfway across the country to come work here at Notre Dame. And it's been a wonderful place to be. I will say this, you know, I see students praying at the Grotto of Our Lady, not just during finals week and not just on football weekends, but they're praying there because it's incredibly easy to be Catholic at the University of Notre Dame. Dorm masses and rosary, you know, public rosary. Just on May 1st, we had a crowning of Our Lady, a procession from the Basilica down to the grotto where we crowned Our Lady. This is a place devoted to the Blessed Mother, and it is so... it's just so joyful to be here. And there are so many good things that happen at Notre Dame. You know, but the story is always going to be when Notre Dame does something that is not Catholic, because that's what gathers the headlines, right? But the reality is, like I said, we have 675 student fellows of the DeNicola Center who don't get written about because they're just part of the fabric of the life at Notre Dame and the authentic Catholic life. And again, forming disciples of Jesus Christ. That ultimately is what Catholic education is supposed to be about. And it's an absolute joy for me to be part of this mission.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, you're listening to Beacon of Truth. I'm your host, Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers, and you're listening on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. And we're talking today with the communications specialist and my very dear friend, Ken Hellenius, at the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. And I'm sure some of you are listening and your jaws are hitting the ground like, wait a minute, what? This exists at Notre Dame? You know, how come more people don't know about this? You know, and what I do is, you know, as I travel around speaking and people find out I went to Notre Dame and say, oh, my son and my daughter got accepted. Do you think they should go? We're a little bit nervous because we hear about these crazy things happening on campus. And I say, well, know what? Here's what you need to do. Call my friend Ken at the Nicholas Center and talk with him about, you know, the kind of landmines to avoid, you know. But your child can have an outstanding experience at Notre Dame. You just have to, you know, have someone kind of guide them through. And so, you know, and I've done that a number of times. And yeah. I think people, I think what's great also is that, you know, when I talk to parents about young people, or when I talk to young people themselves, there's three things that I hear constantly. First of all, that I think that the Nicholas Center is kind of anesthetizes, not anesthetizes, but is kind of the inoculation against these kinds of things. One, they say they want to hear the truth and they're not hearing it, right? I mean, all the time. We want to hear the truth. We're not hearing it. One. Second, there's a serious disconnect between their faith and their everyday life. You know, they learn about the faith, but they don't, but that doesn't translate to a deep relationship with Jesus Christ. And then finally, they have no idea how much God loves them, and which is probably the saddest of all. And it sounds from what you're describing that the Nicholas Center provides all of that for students so they can be not just well-educated, but well-formed as human beings to go forth into the world to whatever discipline they may be called to, whether that's engineering or architecture or accounting, and bring those values and that deep connectedness with the Catholic tradition into those places. It's just wonderful, wonderful work that you're doing there. So how many people work there for the D. Nicholas Center? Do you have professors? I mean, do the professors like volunteer to be part of it? Are they invited by the committee to come in to be part of? How does that work?
Yeah. So we have a faculty director who for the last 12 years has been Professor O. Carter Sneed, who's a professor in the law school. He is an expert in public bioethics, and he's just an incredible force of nature. And Professor Carter Sneed's term is coming to an end at the end of June, and then our incoming faculty director is Professor Jenny Martin, who has been involved in the work of the center for many years. She is a professor of theology, and she teaches in the program of liberal studies. She is also just an absolute joy. In many ways, you know, Carter Sneed has been, as a expert in public bioethics, he's been really kind of focused and a lot of our work has been on the ethics side of ethics and culture. And Professor Martin is an expert in theological aesthetics, and she's an expert in Hans Urs von Balthasar and Charles E. And so she actually, in some ways, her emphasis may seem to be on the culture side of ethics and culture. So it's but neither goes away. It's perhaps just an emphasis, and yet our work continues. You know, we have all these fantastic programs, and Jenny is, we're looking forward to her starting on July 1st as the director. And then, as I mentioned, we have about 25 to 30 faculty fellows who are, again, they're from across the disciplines, and they are volunteers. Yeah, they are affiliated with the center. One of the great things that they do in our programs is that we have what are called Soren Supper Clubs, where a group of five or six students will go to family dinner in the home at around the table of a faculty member or a staff member and their family, and just see what is average everyday Catholic dinner, you know, Catholic family gathered around the table to have dinner together. What does it mean to be lived out? Because this is something students don't get to do often, right? They go, they eat in the dorm, maybe they order from Grubhub, whatever it is. But we do these Soren Supper Clubs to show that it's community, it's family. And that so much is what modeling the authentic discipleship really is. And I think that speaks to what you were saying, Deacon. So often we can have our head filled with propositions of the faith, but it's not until we see them lived and lived out in action, you know, much like the letter of James says, you know, show me your faith, you know, I'll show you my faith by my works. And in many ways, it's by living out the faith.
That's so awesome. Well, we've very much been enjoying listening to you, Ken, talk about the Nedeklis Center for Ethics and Culture at my alma mater, the University of Notre Dame. You know, that wasn't there when I was there, and I often wish that it was. So we're grateful for the work that you're doing. Well, remember, you can stream today's show by visiting Podcast Central at EWTN.com/radio. Until we're together again, may Almighty God bless you, keep you, and protect you, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.